What's going on with your house? In need of some renovation, repair? Maybe you want to get some inspection done? Well, I'll tell you what, we've got a couple of guys here that can help you out. Larry Mueller here, my two guests. Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison. John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates of Fitchburg. They are a couple of regular guys who come in on a regular basis, as a matter of fact, to be with us, and always a pleasure to have them along. If you have some questions about what's going on around your home, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Give a call. Ken, welcome back. Nice to have you with us.
It's always nice to be back.
John, thank you for coming back as well. Appreciate
it. Great to be here again.
And you guys are busy?
Yes. It's been a rough winter. Because we haven't been able to get much done with close to 9 feet of snow.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's going to be a nice spring. And, you know, now that the weather's broken, or it's been broken for a long time, I think we look forward to a pretty good spring.
Yeah. And you're fine, too, then, John?
This was a great winter not to be a carpenter. I tell you, being a consultant is a wonderful thing.
It's a lot warmer job, isn't it?
You go look at everybody's ice problems and ice damming and the leaks, and all you have to do is talk, and you don't have to put on your Carhartts and get up on the roof and do all the things that Ken has to do.
Well,
spend a little bit of time shoveling off roofs this winter.
Pat in Green Bay has a question for you guys, so let's go to Pat. Hi, Pat.
Hi, and thanks for coming in and helping us out.
Pleasure.
I have a ranch home built around 1976, you know, standard single-story ranch. It has this hardboard lap siding. It's a 12-inch lap siding. And I want to replace it with either vinyl or even concrete. I was thinking of getting the concrete siding in a wide lap like that. But my question is, there doesn't seem to be any sheathing on my house outside nailed onto the 2x4 structure.
Right.
The hardboard siding was applied right over like a blue board foam insulation board.
Mm-hmm.
And if I go vinyl or any type of replacement siding, should I tear off the old stuff? Is my house going to fall down if I tear that siding off? You know, it almost looks like the siding is holding the house together.
Well, yeah, there is a construction technique that was very popular in the 70s and into the 80s where they didn't sheathe it with plywood or OSB undersheathing 4x8 sheets of that.
Yeah. But it sounded like a cheap technique to me.
It is kind of, you know. And what they do on the corners, though, to keep the building from twisting and falling down is to put metal diagonal bracing on. And that gives it some stability, but it doesn't really give it a lot of backing for nailing any kind of siding on. I would, a lot of times what we normally do is we will sheathe over it, and there's a couple of different ways you can do it. One is to take the insulation board off and put plywood sheathing right on. You can also put sheathing right over the top of that. That isn't going to hurt anything per se, but then you want to make sure that you've got an air permeable water barrier on the outside of that plywood. What would you say, John? Like felt or
felt is still the best. So there's
still the best. Tyvek, or Tyvek is another
Tipar
one.
Tipar, yeah. And all the various ones.
But if you put vinyl on it, I mean, people do put it on right over the top of this stuff, and it is okay. It's not the best thing in the world. Is there anything you want to add, John?
Well, I think, Ken, we want to probably keep the foam or replace with some other foam, because that's providing probably about R6 to this wall system.
Right. I wouldn't take it off completely. I'd either take it off and reapply it, or take it off or leave it on and sheathe over.
Yeah, if it's in pretty good shape, I would think that maybe just saving it. I think it's you mentioned the bracing in the corners. It's good to verify that. You might also find, Pat, that when you get down to the corners that there's 4 feet or 8 foot of plywood on the corners, because that's another technique that they used at that point.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And then with regard to siding, I think both John and I are in agreement that if you can afford the little bit of extra cost, the cement board is a far superior product to vinyl.
Yeah.
I mean, vinyl is final, as they say in the industry. It will last a long time, but it's not hardy. It's you can't really paint it. It's not really a high quality product with regard to its its construction. It may, you know, when you make it, there's a lot of hazardous waste involved.
So it sounds like I probably will go with the concrete composite siding because I like it much better, too. It looks like I'm probably looking at the added expense of resheathing the house with plywood or OSB at that time after a tear-off of the old stuff.
Well, yeah, boy, I'll tell you, that's kind of a... If you could do it, I would say go for it and do it that way. If you can't, verify that the corners are solidly blocked and make sure that the applicator knows, the siding installer knows that, you know, he's got to make sure he's got his materials nailed in properly. The thing about vinyl siding that probably is a little easier to go on directly over the foam is that it actually hangs on the nail. You don't drive the nail home. You hang it on the nail, and it moves back and forth as the temperatures change, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
All right. Good luck.
Yep. Hey, thanks a lot. I'll need it.
Yeah, thanks, Pat. Jonathan in Powers Lake, your turn. Hi, Jonathan.
Hello there. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
My question is, I have a driveway with a crack across it. It's a relatively wide crack, maybe about 3/16 of an inch and maybe an inch and a half deep. And I was wondering about the best way to fill it, if I should put some backer rod in there and then some sort of caulking before I seal the driveway or along those lines.
Jonathan, is the driveway relatively flat? It's not a real steep pitch, is it?
No, it's a relatively flat driveway.
Yeah.
And most of it's in good condition. We just have this one crack going all straight across the width of it.
I can tell you a real good product to use. There's the Sonneborn company, which you should be able to look up online, makes a self-leveling urethane caulk called Sona Lastic, SL1. And you should be able to get that at most lumber yards or certainly at a masonry distributing place.
Okay.
And, yes, you're correct. You definitely do want the backing rod. And if it's older concrete, you may want to use the primer. But Sonneborn's got really good installation instructions, and this stuff is self-leveling. So you just sort of pump it in out of the caulk, and it levels itself out, and it looks very, very professional. Yeah, I think it's an excellent product for a homeowner to use.
Okay, well, great.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for the advice.
You
Certainly.
Bet. Thanks for calling. Jeff and Phillips, we'll go to you next. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, thanks for the show.
Sure.
Hey, I got a question about people cutting their own lumber. I have a lot of lumber stored in my sheds, and I was wondering if you could update. I have friends that, too, have lumber, 2-inch and 1-inch dry pine and balsam and also hardwood we can make paneling. What is the updates on the codes for using that? Is it legal to use that in remodeling or building a new home?
So this is wood that you've cut yourself and milled? Or?
Yes, I'm a logger, and I took it to the mill, and some of it I kiln-dried myself, and I made an air kiln with a greenhouse type 45-degree angle windows.
Oh, sure. You can use the material. What you want to do is check to make sure that the moisture content isn't too high. What do they say, about 11%?
Depending on the time of year, anywhere from 8 to 14, but 11 would be about ideal.
Sure. It would be great fun to do that. We've seen a lot of people cut their own logs down and mill their material and then kiln dry it or air dry it and then use it for paneling or structural work or anything, sure.
Why Jeff, are the building inspectors in our area, Price County and Oneida County, won't allow that?
Well, what you need to do...
Could that be different from county? Excuse me.
No, it should not be different. In fact, you should be able to go to the appendix in back of the State Uniform Dwelling Code, and it is going to give you the modulus of elasticity for all different kinds of wood, and probably 70, 80 types of wood. And so let's say you're going to frame something that's 12 feet wide. And the usual thing is SPF and 12 feet. Well, you're going to have to use a 2x10. You can actually look up your wood, look up the modulus of elasticity. And in the appendix, they actually have a page where they show you exactly how to do it in case you're not a building inspector. And you should be able to actually download that online by going to Department of Industry, Labor, Human Relations, Building and Safety. I think if you probably just type in Wisconsin Uniform Dwelling Code, and everything's going to be in there. And so when you submit your plans, you just say, I've looked at Appendix J or whatever appendix it is at Table J25, and I'm using this Wisconsin white pine rather than because it meets the span tables. And I can't imagine that your building inspector would have a problem with it as long as you've done that little bit of research.
Okay. that those initials you gave me for the department, can I get those off the air?
Actually, just type in Wisconsin Uniform Dwelling Code, and I'm sure that that code will come up, and then you can download the chapters and print it out and look at the appendix. And there's even a code commentary that's available from the state that explains it for the non-professional. State of Wisconsin's really good about their Uniform Dwelling Code, which is why we have not accepted the International Residential Code, because I think ours is still a little bit more superior and a little bit more consumer-friendly.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good to hear. I was assuming that it was illegal to do that.
Good luck. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks a lot for calling. Dave in Middleton is up next, I believe. Dave, hello.
Hello. I'm building an addition on my house, and I've poured concrete frost footings in it, and it's going to be a crawl space underneath it. And I was just a couple questions. One is that I was debating whether to put a cement floor on it in place of putting Visqueen down for a vapor barrier.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I'd like to know what your opinion if that's worthwhile or not. It is going to have an access from a current basement.
Well, I can give you the short answer. Is you're going to have to put Visqueen down anyway.
Yeah.
You're going to want a vapor barrier. If you pour concrete, you put the vapor barrier under the concrete and pour it on top. 6 mil plastic, I think the code reads 4 mil, but I don't know of anybody that puts that down.
Mm-hmm.
6 mil is a little bit stronger, of course. And you can do, are you pouring the work yourself?
I'm going to have somebody that's a concrete person help me.
Oh, sure. Okay. Well, then they can, it's really worth the extra money to pour a little bit of extra concrete down there. You don't need much, 2 inches, 3 inches would be ample. And basically you don't even have to smooth it out too much, except that it's nice to be able to crawl around in there and do some work if you're crawling around on your back to, say, run ducting and that sort of thing underneath the floor joists. But I, if you've got the money, I'd say do it. The other alternative is to put the Visqueen down and pour some either light gravel or sand over it. 3/4-inch stone would be okay, or pea gravel or sand. But if you got the money, I'd say go for it. Another thing you could do is you could put down some insulation board, some 1-inch blue dowel, and then put your vapor barrier. Oh, let's see. You'd put your vapor barrier down first, wouldn't you, on that, John? I can't remember. I haven't had my second cup of coffee today.
I don't think it makes too much difference as long as the vapor barrier is part of the assembly.
Mm-hmm. Would there be any advantage to putting foam board underneath the concrete?
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, okay. Put the foam board down.
Yeah, you could do that too. I mean, that would give you extra heat. Are you insulating the perimeter?
Well, yeah, that's my other question too. Mm-hmm. I'm not planning on venting it. It's going to have an opening to the house. But I was thinking about maybe. I see that you can buy some spray foam type things where you could spray foam the inside walls of it. Currently, I've got it blue foam board on the inside and the outside of the current wall, an inch on each side.
You can spray, but you need to build a frame wall, and then you need to put a 15-minute fire barrier over the top of that, like drywall or I think 5/8 plywood. I know 3/4 would be fine. So you'd probably be better off using the foam board. And if you're going to use it inside and just have the board exposed, you'd want to use something like Tuffar by I'm repressing the name. What is it? Celotex makes it, right.
Okay.
It's a polyisocyanurate with an aluminum coating on. The reason the code asks you to put something over it is it's both a fire barrier and it also keeps insects from boring through it. The best way to do it is to insulate the outside. If you can insulate the outside of the foundation, you've got your foundation wall, your concrete wall insulated, and mm-hmm. you can create a very nice envelope.
Okay, well, I do have blue board, an inch thick blue board insulation on the inside and the outside of the frost wall.
Mm-hmm. That's the new on the addition.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Are you talking above that? Are you talking just the walls of the frost footing, frost walls?
I'm talking about the foundation wall.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay, that's what I thought. Okay.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah,
yep.
Great. Have fun.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Someone wondered about the crack filler again. Could you repeat the name of that, John?
Yes, Larry. The company that makes it is Sonneborn. Don't ask me to spell it. S-O-N-N-E-B-O-U-R-N-E. That's about right,
sounds right,
Ken.
Yeah.
And then the material is Sonelastic SL1. But if you go to the lumber yard or the masonry place and just ask for a self-leveling urethane concrete control joint, there's probably companies other than Sonneborn that make it. But that's the one that I've recommended most frequently and one I've used myself and managed not to make a mess of.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to say that on making a mess, I just a little note of caution. When you do it, it comes in a large quart tube caulk, so you'll need a large caulk gun. But if you really squirt it in there and you've got any kind of a pitch at all and it leans over, it over fills, it'll just drain down your driveway,
right.
And it could be a horrible mess. So what I would recommend is fill a little bit at a time and just keep going over it until you got the amount you want.
Yeah. So I asked Jonathan whether he had a pitched driveway or not. Because,
that's true. It'd be all down his driveway.
Right.
Ken Adams and John Freiberg are our guests today. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking home renovation, repair, and inspection with Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison and John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates of Fitchburg. Glad to have them along. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Let's turn to Sandy in River Falls next. Sandy, hello.
Hello. Thank you very much for this call. It's a very timely, for the show. It's a timely show for me because our interior designer this morning discovered a damp spot in the carpet on our basement floor. Our bedroom is at lower levels. My husband's standing here coaching me. He came home immediately when I told him about this damp spot. But anyway, it hasn't happened before. Obviously, I can't ask technical questions about it. I wondered, do we need to take up the carpet? My husband's saying, no, put a dehumidifier in there. He thinks it's condensation. So I don't know if this is a good question or not. I don't know if other people have this problem.
John might have an answer for that. John, you work a little bit with that sort of thing.
Sandy, it's going to depend upon how much water got in.
How much water got in.
Right. And I guess one of the worries I have, this is a finished lower level.
A finished lower level.
And you've got probably drywall on the walls.
We have drywall on the walls.
And nothing grows mushrooms and mold like drywall.
Is that right?
Yeah. I think that what I would probably do is go out and buy an inexpensive pin-type moisture meter and do some poking around.
Moisture meter?
Right. Good moisture meters are a couple $100, but Ken, isn't there something out there you can buy for $50 that at least gives you some idea whether the drywall is wet or not?
I don't know.
I've seen some inexpensive ones. I've never used them.
Would a builder have one of those?
Most builders are going to have a good pin moisture meter because they're always checking hardwood flooring and other things for the moisture level, but you may find one where you can buy one. But I'm a little concerned that if some of that water wicked up into the drywall, that we could have some air quality problems in the future.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So determine how much water came in. If it's just, if it's a half cup of water, don't rip everything up.
Mm-hmm.
Just put that dehumidifier in. But if more water than that came in and the backside of that drywall is actually wet,
mm-hmm.
then you may not only have to pull the carpet back, but you may actually have to replace some drywall.
Okay, yeah. Well... Mm-hmm. We shall contact, we've got a very good friend who's a builder, and I'll find out if he's got a moisture meter and get right on it.
All right.
Great.
Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, Sandy. Thanks for calling. And, your husband might not agree, but he's not a builder. So, Laura in Arpin, it's your turn. Hi, Laura.
Hello. My husband and I moved into a new house that we built in February. And just before we moved in, we got a temporary 30-day occupancy permit.
Uh-huh.
And there were three or four things that we had to fix before we could get our final. And we fixed those, called the inspector. He called us back and gave a date that he would be here, and he's never come, and our 30 days are up. So I was wondering if we are in trouble somehow or what the issue is when that inspector never came and he hasn't called us back or anything.
This would be a great time to go on a long vacation someplace really wonderful. Yeah, I wouldn't worry about it. You've done everything that you were required to do. It's the inspector's responsibility now to get out in a timely fashion. Chances are he just hasn't had an opportunity to get out to see your place. Probably what The items that weren't up to code were probably minor issues to begin with, and he just wants to make sure that they're done correctly, and he'll probably show up in his own good time. As long as you contacted him, I would not worry at all.
The other thing that may have happened, Laura, he may have done what was called a drive-by. He stopped, rang the doorbell, said, these are nice people. They probably took care of it, went back to the office, and signed off on it. So you may want to call your local building inspection office and just have them check the file. You may find that it's all signed off on.
Oh, okay.
All right.
You'll know when your taxes go up.
Thanks, Laura. Jim in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. Say, when contractors talk to a client as far as removing the old siding and putting on new siding, I was told about wraparound. What do they actually mean by wraparound? When should it be used and when shouldn't it be used? And I'll hang up and listen.
Do you mean wraparound insulation or wraparound?
Well, it's like not paper, but it's like plastic or something that they just wrap around the house.
Or are you talking about something like Tyvek house wrap?
Yeah.
Yeah, Tyvek house wrap is something that is used as an air permeable, I'm sorry, a moisture permeable. No, an air...
Vapor permeable.
Thank you.
Vapor permeable.
Oh, thanks, John. Glad you're here.
Yeah.
A vapor permeable air barrier, basically. And that is used quite often behind new siding. Another thing that's used is felt, asphalt impregnated felt. So is your contractor planning to use this? Or?
We lost him.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well...
Sounded like he was. Jim, I'm assuming you're listening. It really is a good idea because it does a multiple number of things. One is it's going to make your house less drafty because, mm-hmm. as Ken said, it is a wind barrier. And secondly, it's going to make sure you don't get leaks, especially if you're putting up vinyl siding. You really need to have a water barrier in back of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and just make sure that he installs it correctly. Tyvek has really good installation instructions now.
You can go right to their website and see them.
That's right.
You can speak to your contractor intelligently about it.
In fact, Jim, what you could do is you can even go to the website, download it yourself, and give it to your contractor and say, hey, this is part of the contract. Here's my specifications. And if you're doing vinyl siding, you should do the same thing with the vinyl siding. Is go right to the manufacturer's website, download it. And
mm-hmm.
the instructions are well written so that a homeowner can see whether things are going on correctly or not correctly.
Mm-hmm. Good points. Thanks again, Jim. Bill in Appleton, it's your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hello, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
See, I've got an old Victorian house in Appleton, dates from 1870. I've lived in it for about 3 years. I have a question about the garage. The garage is attached to the house. It's also a brick structure. The floor of the garage is concrete and has been poured over a room underneath, which contains the furnace and a few other utilities.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know the age of any of this. There is a crack in the floor of that garage that would separate the left-hand and right-hand wheels of your car. Really, the garage can contain only one car. Mm-hmm. And I noticed some drainage in the winter from the car will drip into the room down below. Now, the house was inspected 3 years ago when we bought it, and the house inspector went in there and didn't have any comments or anything. But at some point, I don't know how to assess the structural integrity of that floor and know when I will need additional bracing so that my car doesn't fall through into the room down below.
Well, Bill, there's a couple things you can look for. I can't tell you how to look for everything. Because even a structural engineer standing on site is going to have trouble telling exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
But first, we really want to stop that moisture. That floor is being held up by the structural steel that's inside it, so it's called reinforcement bars or rebars. There's probably a whole bunch of number 4 and number 5 bar in there. And concrete by itself is just really, really weak when you're spanning things. So the steel is very important. Now, if that water is dripping through there, it's hitting some of that steel, and that steel's going to rust, and as it rusts, it's going to expand, and as it expands, it's going to damage the concrete. So I think what we need to do is get on top of that floor, take a grinder, grind that crack out, and then we're going to go back to that Sonelastic SL1 again, or a similar product, and get that sealed. Now, when you look at that ceiling from underneath, if you see places where the concrete is beginning to pop out, and there's like loose flakes...
And that is definitely occurring. Yeah.
Okay, well, pop out one of those loose flakes, and my guess is what you're going to find is a rusty piece of rebar. And if you find that, I think you really need to call a local structural engineer. Generally, what we specify for these is we'll put a very often wood rather than a steel frame underneath it, because if you get more leakage through the new steel, it would have a problem like the old steel. These are usually pretty easy fixes, and a local structural engineer, you know, I think you may as well just go ahead and have something devised for it, but get that floor sealed so you don't have as much moisture coming into it.
Okay.
Very good. That gives me at least a starting point. I just have no expertise on my own. I didn't even know how to even take the first step. So that gives me good information.
All right, Bill. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Len in Madison's up next. Hi, Len.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Say, I have another question regarding outside siding. In 1979, I put what was a black Celotex, I think it's made out of corn stalk or something like that, on the sheathing on the outside of my house. I want to tear that out and put either Thermax, foil-faced Thermax, or a polystyrene board, something to insulate, you know, much better than what it had been. The problem I have is I put 4 mil thick plastic on the inside of the house going right underneath the gypsum board. I don't want to create a vapor barrier between the outside and the inside. What would be the best product to insulate the outside wall and act as a good sheathing that I can put either over a thinner plywood sheathing on the outside or just standalone?
Okay. John, you want to take a crack at that?
If you check with your local lumber yard, you can get what's called the PERM rating on exterior foam insulation. And you'll find that most exterior foam insulation is waterproof, but it is vapor permeable to some extent, so that your wall still can breathe to the outside.
What rating would be ideal?
0.6, Ken, I think, is that sort of the minimum?
I don't want to speak to that because I'm not really sure about that. But it would be worth checking with
the
yard.
I think I think the thing to do is to check with the lumber yard, then maybe do a little online search at some of the manufacturers. Blue foam is used all the time as exterior mm-hmm. sheathing. So we know that it's permeable enough because the state does allow its current use. Exactly what the numbers are, I'm not sure.
Okay,
but what I would do is go back with make sure you've got something that's relatively vapor permeable, and then go over the top of that with felt or with Tyvek or with a layer of each, as some people do.
How thick is your wall? Is it
It's only a 3.5-inch stud, okay. So it's 4/9/16.
Okay.
My hope was to use a foil face Thermax, but it sounds like it may be a vapor. It may be a vapor blocker.
Well, the only way you could get away with that is if you were to add enough insulation so that the inside of your wall never reaches the dew point, and then you don't have to worry about moisture getting into the wall. But that's kind of tricky, especially in a retrofit situation. And so you're probably wise to follow John's advice.
I will do that. I did want to caulk the seams of whatever I put up, whether it's blue board or Thermax. Am I unwise to caulk around the seams of the exterior?
I think it's probably going to be redundant as long as you've got a water barrier on the exterior, because that's going to take care of any wind. Now, the other thing that you're going to find, rather than trying to caulk it, Len, is almost all of these foams, if not all of them, have a tape that works. Because some people, it is okay to use just foam with all of the seams taped as a water barrier. I don't recommend it, but it is allowable. So if you really want a double wind barrier, just buy the correct tape with the foam, put up the foam, tape it, and then put your sheet type or your roll type wind and water barrier over the top of it, and that should give you a real nice, tight fit.
Well, thanks for your advice. I'll follow that and go forward.
All right. Thanks, Len, for calling. And let's go to Carl next in Amory. Carl, hi to you.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got an old garage here. We just bought the place this summer, and it's in need of a roof, and one half of it is still, you know, mostly watertight, but the other half looks like, I don't know, if a branch fell on it and poked a hole through the sheathing or what, but it's there's a couple of spots of rot, and anyway, the whole thing needs to be replaced. I'm just looking at different options. Steel roof, I know with the cost of that going up, that might get cost prohibitive on this old thing. Just wondering what your suggestions are. It's got an asphalt shingle roof right now.
What's on your house, and what type of house do you have?
Well, actually, this is just on the garage. It's unheated and separate.
Well, I guess I'm just wondering what it would look like aesthetically to change the roof styles. You know, I think you've got
aesthetically it would fit pretty well. We're out in a rural area here, and there are plenty of steel roof, a mixture of steel roof and asphalt around here. We've got asphalt shingles on the house right now, as well as one of the other outbuildings.
Well, I mean, you could put steel on if you like it. There's various qualities of steel roofs. And John's starting to get excited now. He wants to add something. I'm just going to back off and let him talk about it.
No, the controlling word here, Carl, is you describe this as an old garage. Boy, you can't put a metal roof on a crooked or badly deflected garage. It just doesn't fit.
Yeah, that's a good point.
The nice thing about asphalt shingles is you can shingle a circle. Asphalt shingles are so flexible, they'll fit on anything. But
How much of a deflection are you talking? Because it's unless you lay a straight edge on it.
Yeah, I think the maximum that you can get a metal roof on is probably L over 250, but I'd rather see like L over 360. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very unlikely that your roof is that straight.
Yeah, okay.
All right,
well, that
solves the issue. All right, thanks, Carl.
Thanks.
We're forcing Carl to take the least expensive alternative. That's something that a contractor usually does.
Connie and McFarland, it's your turn. Hi, Connie.
Hi. I have a question about slab jacking versus filling a crack with a product, you know, such as was mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. We have a concrete driveway, and it has a crack, a couple of cracks, really. The largest one probably is about a quarter of an inch. But my husband seems to think that we have to do slab jacking to fix this problem. So I guess that's what I'm wondering. What's the difference between using slab jacking versus, you know, filling a crack?
Well, slab jacking is, there's another term for slab jacking is mud jacking. And what they do is the mud jacker will bore some holes. I think they're usually about an inch and a half in diameter, 2 inches in diameter in the concrete, and strategically pump in a wet sand mixture underneath. And that will pump up and adjust the levels of the concrete slab. Now, in your situation, it's hard to know without seeing it, is the crack... are both parts of the crack at the same plane, or is one part heaved up higher than the other? You know, is the concrete relatively flat, I guess, is my question.
Well, yeah, there is some heaving. That's mm-hmm. I was trying to understand under what conditions, you know, would we do the slab jacking instead of just filling the hole? So you're saying it depends on how much it's heaved?
Well, see, all concrete cracks.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons that concrete contractors put expansion joints into a sidewalk or into a driveway is so that they can, to some degree, control a crack. So, you know, that's a weak point, and thereby it'll crack at that point, typically. But if it's cracked and heaving or tilting in one direction or another, now that's a good... or possibly a good candidate for mud jacking or slab jacking, as you call it.
Uh-huh.
If it's just cracked and moved just very slightly, I would say if you rubbed your hand over the top of it, they're both planes are relatively the same height, but there's a quarter-inch crack there, then doing something like the fill that John has been talking about here earlier would be an ideal thing. So that's the question. Now, another question I have is the driveway on a steep slant, or is it level?
No, it's level.
All right, the reason I say that is I've seen driveways on slants have the sand or the substrate underneath washed away, and so you've got big hollow spots underneath, and sometimes those are great candidates for mud jacking. So.
Yeah. Well, it has a little bit of a slant, but actually the surface is it's quite a bit, I guess.
It's quite a bit what?
The angle is quite a bit where it's pulled away.
So I mean the height difference between the two sides?
Yeah. From what you've said, I think we're going to need to do the slab jacking.
Well, here's what I think you might want to do is you might want to call a contractor that does mud jacking and have him come out and give you an estimate and give you his opinion.
Okay.
Or her opinion. You know, they'll be in a lot better position than we are to assess it over the, you know, over the telephone lines.
Sure.
Thank you very much.
Yes, you're welcome. Good luck to you.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Ruth in Brookfield is up next. Hi, Ruth.
Hi. I have a subfloor question. We have a ranch house that was built in 1969 or 70. I seem to remember the structural engineer saying that we had two layers of subfloor made out of boards. Maybe they run in the diagonal directions. I'm not sure. If we have two layers of board subfloor, can we just pull up the carpet and put a nice finish on the upper one and use that as a floor?
Well, that depends. Now, when did you say the house was built?
1969 or 70.
Well, then it would be pretty likely that they would be two layers of plywood. And if you have two layers of plywood down there, that would be a pretty nice floor, but it wouldn't necessarily be nice enough to finish.
Actually, when you look at it from below, it's boards.
It is.
And I think might be six inches wide.
Mm-hmm. Are they on the diagonal?
Yes.
Okay, and then the top ones are square to the joints.
I've never seen the top ones. Is that how it's always done?
Typically, you know, the carpet that's on the floor been on the floor since you've been in the house?
Yes.
And how long ago did you move in?
It's been there over 20 years. We've been there 18.
You know, there's a possibility that you have hardwood floors.
I peaked. But that might be that underlayment.
Hmm? Yeah, well, if you were to, say, open up one of your heat registers and look in at the cross-section of the floor, or sometimes you could remove a cabinet or that sort of thing and see if you can see what the cross-section is. And if it's hardwood floor, then, wow, you might have a pretty good floor there. You could pull it up and refinish it. If not, if you got two layers of subfloor, you could pull up that top layer and lay down either hardwood or a resilient floor or tile. Or, you know, there's a little bit more work you'd have to do to get the tile in, but you could do tile, you know, whatever your interests are.
So there's no way that we could use that upper layer of subfloor as a floor?
Well, there again, it's hard to say because without looking at it, it's usually surface nailed. If it's just, number two pine wood, there'll be lots of knots in it. But if it's a hardwood or if it's a higher quality, like a porch floor decking, which I've only seen once inside a house, but I have seen it, then you can refinish it. But the best thing to do is take up a section of the carpet, look at it closely and see what kind of floor it is, and then you'll know exactly what you have to deal with.
Yeah, that carpet.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
18
welcome.
Years on a carpet, that's pretty good.
That's a pretty good life. You got your money's worth out of that carpet.
Yep, that's for sure. Thanks, Ruth. Thanks for calling. Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison and John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates of Fitchburg are guests today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking home renovation, repair, and inspection issues with Ken Adams and John Freiberger today. Larry Mueller here. Give us a call if you have a question. The number is 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And don't forget, you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And let's go to Dan in Sun Prairie. Dan, hello.
Hi. I have another water in the basement question.
Okay.
First of all, the house does have a drain tile around the perimeter, and it's running like crazy, so you know that appears to be working. The water is coming in through a couple of places relatively in the middle of the slab, and they're in spots where I actually cut about a year ago. I cut holes in the floor to put in footings for posts because we had to jack up the floor. And there, I suppose, I can't remember, but I probably cut through a layer of plastic in the bottom, which isn't there anymore because the footings stick down, you know, about a foot deep. And, you know, I filled in, leveled it off with concrete, but I didn't do a spectacular job of making a smooth finish, you know, so it's probably not as good of, you know, watertight as the rest of the floor. And so the water, it's not running in fast, but it's, you know, it's damp, and eventually we're going to put some carpet back over it, or at least that's what was there. And I'm wondering if there's anything you can, some kind of epoxy sealer or something like that you could put down to stop the water, or...
You got some problems there, John.
Well, one of the problems is you live in Sun Prairie, where a lot of the city is very, very flat.
Yeah, right.
And then you've got a very gravelly, sandy soil underlying a lot of Sun Prairie, so you get a lot of what's called hydrostatic head pressure.
Yeah.
Is it gets saturated under your house, and even though your drain tile are doing a good job, they're not picking up all the water, and that water is trying to come up through the floor.
Right.
And now that that plastic has been cut, it's got an easy path.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know of any way of going back and really patching that. I think what you should take a look at is getting rid of the carpet.
Yeah.
And replacing it with something that can get damp, like a ceramic tile, a porcelain tile.
Okay.
So that you simply don't have to worry about it.
Okay.
But just take a look at the basement. If you've got drywall that touches the concrete, get that cut up 3/4 of an inch.
Okay.
Hold your base up an eighth of an inch. Yeah, basically say to yourself, look, this basement's going to leak, and I could spend thousands and thousands of dollars and not get it to not leak.
Right.
So I'm just going to say it's going to leak when we get a winter with 100 inches of snow, and then
right.
we get 9 inches of rain on top of it.
Yeah,
it sounds like, you know, sounds like your house is actually performing pretty well considering the weather that we're having. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's, like I said, it's not a lot of water, but yeah. if there was something easy you could, you know, put on it that would stop it, I'd, you know,
there really isn't anything easy. The problem is there's so much pressure under there that it's going to pop through almost anything.
Yeah,
so.
I was kind of surprised to see, because, you know, like I said, the tile's running like crazy, and yet there's water coming up basically
right.
above the level of the tile, which is interesting. Maybe, you know, if you're doing it all over, to put a tile through the center of the, under the slab would be good. But
that's actually being done pretty frequently now.
Uh-huh.
If you've got like a ranch house, you'll find two runs going across the house, plus the inside, plus the outside.
I see.
So they can handle quite a bit.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to do tile, do you have to use a certain kind of, I mean, any thin set would work, or?
Yeah, I would use a cement, Portland cement base, epoxy thin set.
No, don't use mastic.
No, nothing.
Okay. Thin set mortar is what you want to do.
Okay.
All right.
All right, well, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. Thanks for calling. Yep, you don't want any carpet down there, that's for sure. Bob in Wauwatosa, it is your turn. Hi, Bob.
Good morning to you, gentlemen. I've got a question about getting quotes from contractors on the basis of time and material. And the reason I'm curious about this is that somebody told me that you'll get lower quotations if you ask them to separate the time and material categories. We've got a major job coming up this year. We've got to have about an 80-foot retaining wall put in that's going to be approximately 3 feet high. So that's going to be quite a bit of material and a fair amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm especially interested in, well, the ins and outs of requesting a quote on that basis. Is there a right way to go about asking? And if a contractor indicates they don't care to quote that way, what should we think?
Well, that's a very good question. And what I would say is time and material contract is good if you really trust the contractor you're working with. And if you think you're going to be changing specifications as you go, if there's things you may want to modify on the fly, because then you're paying for what you get, but you want to have a good working relationship with that person to begin with. You also want to stipulate what the markup is going to be at the time for materials, what his labor charges are for a carpenter, or in your case, maybe a mason or a concrete installer.
So you should actually ask them that?
Absolutely. You want it, because that way, when you provide time and material contract, what you're doing is you're, in a sense, providing all of the, you have all the right in the world to ask for all of the receipts, and you should understand that they're going to want to make some money on each thing that they buy.
Right.
Because that's how you stay in business.
Sure,
and so,
sure.
And so so any materials that they buy or any equipment that they provide will have a charge to them, and that charge will be their cost plus their markup. And you have a right to see that if you do a time and material contract. Now, if you are interested in time and material contracts and your contractor or the contractors that you're invited to bid on the work are also interested, I would recommend maybe some sort of a hybrid between a flat fee and a time and material contract. Now, these are kind of cool because what they do is they say, we have a time and material contract with a limit on the cost, with a ceiling, basically. So you know that, say the job's going to cost $100,000, or they think the job's going to cost $100,000, they will charge you T&M up to that point, and if it goes over, they have to eat it. But if it stays under, then you get a little bit of a price break. Now, contractors are not always willing to do that, but they might be willing to give you a portion of the money back and share the savings with you. If it's something that's pretty straightforward, you could do, and you've got plans and they're very well laid out, flat fee's the way to go because everybody's going to bid on exactly the same thing. And, it's up to you. It's you meet each person individually. You look them in the eye. You look at their work. You talk to some of the previous customers, and you get an objective and a subjective feeling for the person, and you look at the prices, and you go from there. Okay. I don't always recommend taking the low price on construction either, because I joke around with architects. Whenever I get a job, the first question out of my mouth is, "What did I forget?" and so sometimes the low bid is not necessarily the best bid.
Right.
The country of Japan does it really well. When they put out bids, they throw away the low bid and the high bid, and then they take the average one in the middle. And I think that's got a certain that's got a certain appeal, I think, for everybody.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks,
good
Bob.
Luck to you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Darlene in Green Bay will go on to you now. Hi, Darlene.
Hi, Larry. I'm having a little coffee from your Larry Mueller mug.
Oh, good for you.
And I appreciate Ken and John. I love, love, love your show. I have a house built maybe in around 1915, thick poured concrete walls, and there's a crack in the west wall, and the widest part of the crack, distance across the crack is about 3/4 of an inch. I really like the Solastic SL1, but I don't want to fill it with drippity drip as it drains away.
No.
This is on the wall.
Is there
too,
another product?
This is on the wall. Yeah. John, is there another product?
Well, first, is this a crack or is this a joint?
Is it a what?
Is it a crack or is it a joint? Is it something where...
It's a crack.
Okay, so it actually has sharp edges on it and the concrete actually cracked there.
Yes.
Okay, well, the first thing we have to figure out is why did the concrete crack? Because we don't want to patch it and then have it crack again.
Okay.
So you may want to have somebody take a look, and this is a vertical crack or a horizontal crack?
It goes at a really interesting little angle like a river, and it's probably a total of maybe 2.5 feet in all.
Oh, so it's not a terribly long crack then?
No.
Is it by a window or an opening?
It is underneath a west window, basement window.
Okay, so that sounds like that's probably just a curing crack then.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, there are lots of epoxy fillers. In fact, there are some, though they have to put in professionally, that actually are structural. They'll actually glue the wall back together.
Okay. But I can do it myself, I'm sure.
Yeah. So I think, again, this is probably go out to whatever your local brickyard is there in Green Bay.
Okay.
Tell them what you have, and they're probably going to recommend an epoxy for you. There are some concrete fillers also that actually come in the smaller caulk guns. And you can actually apply them as if they were a caulk, but they are a cementous-type material rather than something latex-based or acrylic-based that might turn moldy on you.
Okay.
So I think just go out to your local lumber yard or brick yard, tell them what you have. Most of these places are very consumer-friendly, and they'll point you in the right direction.
Sure. There was one other thing. Is this crack below the grade?
Yes.
Can you get to it from outside? You can't get to it from outside.
I'm digging it away right now to take a look at the outside of it.
Okay. Because if you can get to it from the outside, it would be really terrific to be able to patch the outside of it, too.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Another thing, I'm putting some stucco repair doing a little stucco repair on the front. There are two little arms that stick out from the front of the house.
Mm-hmm.
I guess
wing
they're
walls.
Called arms. Mm-hmm. And my stucco is so thin. Is there a thickener, or do you just mix it thicker? Because it runs down, too, when I put it on.
Did you buy, a stucco mix or something? What did you buy?
I bought some kind of stucco patch.
That's probably...
Does it mix with water, or does
yep.
it... Oh, and you might be just mixing it too thin.
Yeah, could be. Could I add a little concrete to it?
Well, you know, this is kind of a tricky one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because is it real stucco, or is it a veneer over, foam board?
No, this is real stucco.
Yeah, this is a 1915 house, so that's actually a Portland cement type stucco. You really should be probably patching that with a Portland cement type stucco, and that's to really get it to match and to look good takes a certain amount of expertise, and you may want to check up in Green Bay and see if there is a plastering contractor who also does exterior stucco and can mix it up for you.
Yeah.
Now, is the house painted then also? The stucco is painted?
No.
Good.
Okay, because we don't want to paint the stucco, so you really need a professional who can help you get a match.
And thank you very much for calling, Darlene. Our guests, Ken Adams and John Freiberger, here on the Ideas Network. Talking home renovation, repair, and inspection issues now with Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison, John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates of Fitchburg. Both regular guests on our show, and really pleased to have them along. If you have some questions for them about your home, I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890 and email us at talk@wpr.org. And Steve in Prairie du Sac is online, been waiting a while. Steve, thank you for waiting. Hi.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 98-year-old home with a, I guess it's a sandstone foundation, full basement that's approximately 75% complete. In the areas that I can see the foundation, they've obviously parged in the past, and that parging is coming off. Structurally, that's not a concern. The house is well sloped away on most of the sides. On one side, I've got a porch, so it's covered, and on the last side, I've got concrete sidewalks, so water intrusion is not an issue. I don't have any visible water coming down. I guess what I'm concerned about is the structural integrity of that wall. You know, the parging is coming off, and the mortar is extremely soft in between the joints. The axial load of the house is probably not enough that it's a concern, and the walls are not leaning. The stone is 16 to 18 inches thick, so structurally, from an axial standpoint, like I said, I'm not really concerned. I guess I'm more concerned long-term. Do I need to do anything if that mortar is that soft? Am I going to have a problem down the road?
The mortar will slowly decalcify due to you've got moisture moving through, perhaps in vapor form, but it's going to be slightly acidic from tannic acids, various soil acids coming through, and that is going to display some of the calcium carbonate in the mortar. You'll probably look on a wet day or damp day in the side of your basement, and you'll actually see white crystals of calcium carbonate.
Yeah.
And what I'd suggest you do is simply add some more lime-based mortar. Do not use Portland. But use a lime-based mortar. If you go to one of two websites, first would be the Department of Interior National Park Service, and look up preservation briefs.
Okay.
The second would be Old House Journal's website, and they will also have briefs. In fact, I think they might even have a link to the preservation briefs. If you can't find anything good, email me at frei@chorus.net, and I will send you our standard mortar specification for working on old sandstone and old clay brick. But as long as that wall was built as two walls, or as an outside wall and an inside wall with a center filled with rubble, as long as that wall is not beginning to come apart and all you have is some mortar loss, you have tremendous strength in that wall, go ahead and patch up that mortar. There's no reason why you can't get another 98 years out of it easily.
Well, thank you very much for your help.
Yep, thanks a lot, Steve, for calling. Carolyn in Neshota is up next. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi. We are replacing a rotting deck at our place in northern Wisconsin, and we're trying to make a decision between using treated wood and a polymer like Trex or AZEK. One recommendation we have is just using the deck boards in that. Those come in the 100% polymer, The rest, I guess the rails and everything else, is the older thing mixed with particles of wood or something and the polymer. And then the structural elements have to be treated wood. So I'm just wondering what your experience with that is. The whole thing is about $4,000 more, so it's pretty pricey if we would do the whole thing in that. And then what do you recommend putting on the treated wood?
Well, are you saying that you think you want to do the structural work out of a Trex type material
no,
or out of treated?
The structural part has to be treated wood.
Okay, and it's going to still cost you about $4,000 more to do the Trex.
If we do the rails and everything else.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The only, and then that would be that mixture of its particles of wood, I guess, mixed with the polymer. The deck boards now come in 100% polymer, and
right.
they seem to be highly. Whatever.
Yeah, Trex is a pretty good product, and we use it on decks quite a bit. And the newer Trex has a lot better non-skid feature. It's got one side has a wood grain, and the other side has a sort of a smooth look to it. But it does not. It is a non-skid. Even when it's wet, it will. Your feet aren't going to slide out from under you. It's far superior to use it on a deck than treated lumber. Treated lumber is very volatile. Traditionally, they used southern yellow pine for decking materials. I think sometimes now you can get some other woods, but southern yellow pine, if they use that, it swells and contracts in the moisture, and it will you'll get slivers and checks and stuff. So, I mean, if you can afford the extra money for the deck, I'd say Trex is the way to go. The railings, it's hard to say. I'm not familiar with the product you're talking about. Is it a Trex material
it's
product?
Trex.
It is Trex.
Yeah,
okay.
Right.
Because
and it's apparently what they used to make, and mm-hmm. I guess this deck boards now is a new product that is 100% polymer and whatever, maybe what your experience is all of the older product. One man at a lumberyard told me that it changes color or whatever. They weren't happy with it, and
The railing systems are a little bit different color than the deck. I do know that. So, is that what you're talking about?
No, he said it got black or something.
Well, I'm not really sure about that.
But,
so
you,
John's sort of nodding his head.
Happy with the railing systems?
I've used their railing systems. The only issue with the railing systems that have been a problem is that you have. I think the handrails are only 6 foot lengths.
Right. Yeah.
So you need to have a post every six feet, and some applications it just aesthetically doesn't work. But if you can do that, you should be just fine.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, as you know, Ken, on our house, when it came time for the deck went away. I got sick of staining and fooling around with all that. We just made a brick patio. And that looks pretty good. That looks pretty good. No staining there. Muriel in Lone Rock, your turn. Hi, Muriel.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. And hi, Larry and John and Ken. We did a short radon test in our lower level living area, and it came up 9. And the instructions that we read say that we should now do a longer test. And what we're wondering is, we do have a crack down the hallway in our storage area that's about 12 feet long and about an eighth of an inch wide. And we were wondering, if we filled that crack before we did the longer test, is that going to make any difference in the reading, or is that just wishful thinking?
It very well may make a difference in the reading.
Uh-huh.
What you should probably do is do a six-month test.
What
I'd suggest you do is do from the middle of summer to the middle of winter.
Okay.
Because when the air conditioning's on, when the furnace is on, all of those things make a big difference in the amount of radon. Because when your furnace is on, if you don't have a furnace that brings in outside air, it's going to be acting as an exhaust fan in your basement. So invest in an Alpha Tracker kit, probably $55, $60. I would go ahead and fill that crack. Do you have an open sump pit?
No, we don't.
Good. Okay. Yeah, if there's anything else that there's an opening to the earth, I would go ahead and seal that and then do an Alpha Tracker test kit.
What's that kind of a test again, Alpha?
I believe it's called an Alpha Tracker, usually you can use them for 6 months. But you want as long a term a test as possible, but you want part of the heating part of the season, part of the cooling part of the season, and then the part of the season where nothing's really going on, because that's actually when the radon is the highest.
Okay, when nothing is going on is when it's the highest.
Yeah, I'd expect times like May and September is when you get maximum radon readings, and in something like December, it's probably going to be the lowest.
Okay. Well, we'll give that a try, and thank you very much for the information.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Hugh in Hollandale, it is your turn. Hi, Hugh.
Hello there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead. What's your question?
I have a new approach port in front of my driveway, and I have several, I call them duck ponds, where the water just doesn't seem to flow off. And I was wondering if I could drill holes down through the concrete to allow that water to flow away. One of them is right in front of my door, so every time I walked out last winter, I was standing on an ice pond.
When was this poured? Just recently?
2 years ago.
Have you thought about getting your concrete contractor out there and having him take a look at it?
Yes.
You know, he might warranty it, because that sounds like the kind of thing that is a finish work issue.
I'm sure it is, and we've had several discussions about it, and he doesn't seem to want to come back.
Mm.
Well, drilling a hole to drain it is probably not the way you want to go. I wonder if you could, if you have the height, could you use a leveling compound that would work? I've seen these can be done inside, but I don't really know what kind of results you're going to have with it outside. John's shaking his head too, so I think he's sort of fatalistic like I am about this.
Yeah, it's pretty difficult to find anything that works. Yeah. I mean, you can put like quarry tile over to something that's cemented down, but it sounds like I think you need to look at your contract. And, you know, you've got 6 years to find a defect in a contract in Wisconsin. You're well within that. But you need to write a letter to them and say, look, contract says this and that, and, you know, the standard is that it's got to drain. Please come back and fix it. If he doesn't, you may just have to go to your local small claims court and file an action. Good workmen stand behind their work. Bad workmen end up in small claims court.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And 6 years. I didn't know you had 6 years on that. That's pretty good.
That's under Wisconsin contract law.
Oh, interesting. Daryl in Cumberland, it's your turn. Hi, Daryl.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Good.
I guess I had a question for a guy to see if they had worked with, and what do they think of snapstone?
Snapstone.
Porcelain snap-together tile.
I've heard of it, but I've never had any experience with it. What do you know about it? Have you used it, or is this something you're contemplating?
Something I'm contemplating.
Mm-hmm. Boy, I'd like to know something about it.
John,
I'll bet you there'll be a listener out there with some good information on it. Do you know anything about it?
I don't know anything about it, but you know, Daryl, call back in 6 months and let us know how it's going. Unless a listener calls in and lets us know before. I mean, usually when the chumps get stumped, somebody calls in and rescues us pretty quickly.
I'm terribly sorry, Daryl.
So it's Alrighty. It's a tile, or is it snap? It's snap stone, huh?
It's a ceramic tile that snaps together, and it says it doesn't need the mortar. Mm-hmm. And it can go over the existing vinyl sheet.
Yeah, sounds like an interlocking sort of system. Sounds like a neat idea, but I'm afraid we've never used it.
There's quite a bit of it online. As I just quick typed in snap stone, and I got quite a few hits. Mm-hmm. So you might just go online and take a look at it.
Okay, will do. I'm going to do that when I get home.
All right. Thanks for calling. I wish we could help you out on that one, but I bet you next time both these guys will probably know a little bit about snap stone.
You betcha. You betcha. Hey.
Oh, man. Dick in the town of Springfield is up next, so let's go there. Dick, hi.
Hi. I tuned in just as I heard somebody talking about decking, and we've had a nice and bad experience with decking in the last couple of years. We ripped off an old wood one and used a synthetic material both for the decking and the railing. The railing is wonderful. It's a Monarch brand name. The deck is wonderful, too, in the sense of maintenance and the way it's wearing and everything. But the deck has wood fiber. I cannot remember the brand name. It has wood fiber in it, but it also has a lot of polymer material in it. I've held an infrared automatic instant read thermometer on it, and it gets up to 140, 150 in direct sunlight. And you cannot walk on it in bare feet. It's even bad with socks on. And if I'm not saying you shouldn't use it, but people, I never thought of the temperature issue before we bought it, and it's much hotter than any
wow.
any wood deck would get.
What color is it?
It's a light gray.
Huh? Yeah,
sort of goes with your traditional salt box house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you don't know the name brand of it.
No, I'm sorry, I don't remember what it is. Okay.
I haven't seen that with Trex. Now, that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Trex is a name brand of a product, but, you know, heat would be an issue if anything's going to really absorb heat. It can really be unpleasant to walk on.
Yeah, it's going to be that polymer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, just a thought to keep in mind.
Yeah, thank you.
Okie doke.
Yeah, appreciate the call. And Judith in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Judith.
Hi. This may be a little bit unusual, but I hope you can help me with this. I'm considering moving from a residence to a mixed-use building. And I'm looking at a building that has a shop on the ground floor, two little apartments above it, and I want to combine those two apartments to make a single living space for myself. I did walk through it with a contractor just to see if I was in the ballpark on what my budget would be to do this remodeling.
Sure.
And I'm a little skeptical about his saying that I can do this within like a $30,000 budget. Would you think that if you were going to be tearing down non-supporting walls, putting in a bathroom that would require moving pipes, doing a total rehab on it in terms of repainting everything, putting in some new flooring. Much of it has good hardwood floors. But just in general, taking on a really big kind of project like that, does $30,000 sound like you would be struggling to do that, assuming that all the mechanicals, are good and there aren't any really ugly surprises in the walls?
Yeah. How much, what's the square footage of that, by the way, the total? Do you know offhand?
Yeah, it's about 1,500.
The total?
Well, of the whole building?
Mm-hmm. I mean, of the floor area that you'd be remodeling, 1,500. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's hard to say because if you're adding a bathroom, that's a very expensive piece of real estate. So, and I've seen bathrooms cost $15,000 to $30,000. It's really hard to know without walking through, looking at the specifications, and then pricing out each element. So, here's what I would recommend. If you haven't done this already, have you written down a list of everything that you want to have done in as much detail as possible?
Yeah, this is what I've been working on, and that was when I got to feel uncomfortable with the idea that, he off the top of his head. And, of course, he said, specifications.
Yeah.
He knows he needs the specifications, but I was just trying to see if it was in the realm of possibility.
Yeah. Boy, I'll tell you, I would be real hesitant to move ahead until you have a little better specs or until you know for sure. But were you going to say something?
I would get not only from one, I'd probably get two contractors at least.
Yeah, that's a good point. The other thing, too, is the people that you're talking to, are you familiar with the contractors that you're dealing with?
Yes.
And have you talked to other people that they've done work for?
Yes, this is someone with a particularly good reputation.
Well, that's a good sign. It's just hard to say when they say off the top of my head. Off the top of my head basically means there's not much between the ears going into this thought. So. I'll tell you about contractors. We have made a commitment to remain permanently naive. I'm sure he'd love to do the job for you at a good price. And maybe he's really he believes he can do it, but I would get another opinion, and I would also get more specifications and have him give you some detailed estimates before you move ahead.
You need detailed estimates from him and
at least one other, maybe
one or two others.
Yeah. And good luck.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Judith. Steve in Wausau, you are up. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just was talking with a roofer the other day and about the weatherization of a house as far as writing it off on the income taxes.
Yeah.
He mentioned something that I was very surprised at. He said he doesn't use
black felt paper anymore. He said it just isn't any good. He uses another material. He said you can actually write that off on get a credit on your income tax for, you know, weatherization. And I was just wondering, have you heard of this new material? It's not ice guard. It's the whole roof. It's the felt paper, whatever you want to call it.
What is this new material, Steve?
I was wondering if you had heard about it and why that would qualify. Is it something like a vapor barrier or something? Or
it better not be.
No.
if we put a vapor barrier up there, your shingles are going to have half the life they're supposed to. You have to be very cautious about what you put under shingles, because shingles need to breathe from both sides. And felt paper is actually vapor permeable.
So... And you don't have the name of the material.
Well, because I was half listening. That was the problem. We were just making small talk, and he said he doesn't use it anymore because, you know, I said, well, yeah, you put a new furnace in, you get a credit on your taxes, you know, or a new hot water heater. And he said you also get credit on this new material as a weatherization effort.
I double-checked to see what he was talking about, because if you were half listening, you know, you might have your facts a little bit upside down.
Yeah.
All right.
Good luck. Thanks. And Stuart in DeForest, your turn. Hi. Let's see if we get Stuart on here. Oh, there we go. Stuart, hi.
Hello.
Yes.
Good morning. Or afternoon, I should say. The lady who called earlier about the composite decking, I replaced mine about 2 years ago, and the reason the different boards will discolor and get darker is because that's the tannin in the oak, because those composite boards are made of like 50% plastic material, and the other 50% is like oak flour, they call it. It's ground up. That's the tannin in the oak that discolors it. Hmm. What I bought was called Exotics, and they use maple flour, so the deck, as it lightens up over time, it's all an even color.
Oh, good
point.
So
when you see that discoloring in that composite, that's oak flour, and it's the tannin from the oak that discolors.
All right. Thanks, Stuart.
Yep, no problem.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Good thing to know. Tony in Wisconsin Rapids, hi to you.
Hi. I hope I have enough time, but what I'm in the process of doing is doing a complete remodel exterior to the exterior part of the house. New windows, insulation, and then with the house wrap, you guys were kicking that around earlier.
Yeah.
What's the benefit of doing the like a half-inch foam board along with a felt paper and Tyvek both? Versus just doing like the exterior foam board and just a Tyvek wrap.
The nice thing about felt paper is that when you put fasteners through it, it tends to seal around the fasteners, whereas Tyvek does not. And quite a few contractors and architects at this point are specifying a layer of Tyvek with felt over it, or a layer of felt with Tyvek over it. Same way that we used to specify actually two layers of felt paper. It really gives you more thorough and double protection. I think it's a good way to go.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Tony. And with that, we are out of time. Frank, I'm sorry we didn't get to you, but that's the way it goes. And you guys will be back, and we'll do this all over again.
Yeah, call us again, Frank.
call again.
Nice, first in line, next show.
Thanks a lot for being with us. Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison. He specializes in residential renovation projects. John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates of Fitchburg is involved with historic restoration, water issues, and a licensed home inspector. Appreciate having both of them with us today, and thank you very much for listening. Coming up on tomorrow, well, it's Friday already. Man, did the week go by. It really flew. And on Garden Talk, Barbara Damrosch will be on. She wrote the book, The Garden Primer. It's a classic. And she has updated that classic book. And so I'm real pleased to have her along to talk about her new book, The Garden Primer. Lots about organic gardening in that one. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.